Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with success. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with success.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guy, Chris Klein.
This is Care for My Wealth right here, Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Hanging out this Saturday morning with Chris Klein. Of course, Chris comes to us from Capstone Wealth Management online, careformywealth.com. That's all one word, careformywealth.com. Great website, great resource to learn more about Chris and his team. Also, great opportunity to give him a call. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Chris, I thought we were done with this snow for the season.
Yeah, it just keeps coming. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, almost too hard to push with a bobcat this morning.
Oh, man, it was heavy stuff. I was out there early this morning. I took the puppy out, and so I took the broom to the deck, and even pushing a little bit of snow off there was quite the task, quite the chore. We've got quite the task ahead of us, Chris. A lot going on, and we are in that bear market, and you know, a lot of people are kind of mistaking things. And you were telling me before we came on the air this morning a little bit about a particular credit institution, a particular bank out west that is running into some problems.
Yeah, and I'm sure people have heard of it, and or maybe it's on their minds, and then they start thinking about their own banks and things like that. So it's probably not a bad idea to chat about it a little bit. So SVB Financial, which is Silicon Valley Bank, they were pushed into receivership by the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, yesterday. You know, so look, there are federal laws that exist to stop from inciting a bank run, you know, like criminality kinds of things. So I want to be very careful about what I say. I don't want to do anything that would cause someone to suggest that they should run on the bank or go hide their money under their mattress or anything like that. But I do want to talk about the mechanics of what took place with SIVB as a publicly traded company and as a banking institution. Because it simply reflects what we've been talking about, Sean, over the past, I don't know, weeks, if not months. And that is, you get to a stage of the bear market where you end up in these liquidity and these credit events, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing that everyone should take away from macro views of the economy and how to manage markets is that recessions equal credit events. What's a credit event? Well, it's when something that is dependent upon credit to some extent, companies that make loans, right, banks, things of that nature, when one or more of them blow up, that's a credit event. And some would suggest that the SIVB Silicon Valley Bank situation that took place Thursday and Friday was a liquidity event more so than a credit event. But yeah, for the most part, I think they're inextricably tied. You know, I don't know that you can fully extract liquidity from credit in this particular situation. So just to give you a quick rundown, I mean, SIVB, the Silicon Valley Bank, was no small operation. Now, it's not a Bank of America. It's not a JP Morgan, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not small. It's the 16th largest bank in the United States. So, you know, you break the top 20 in banking institutions in terms of size of its assets. Yeah, I don't know. To me, that's no small number. Now, in relation to JP Morgan, it's tiny. JP Morgan's got over $3 trillion in assets. So you take a company with $210 billion and compare it to something like, you know, a very systemically important operation that would be, you know, viewed as JP Morgan or you know, one of these other major banking institutions. You can see what I mean. Nevertheless, $210 billion in assets is not small. At least that's what we know based on their most recent filings. I would suspect that number's quite a bit lower today after they went through what they went through. They've got about 160 or had 160 to 170 billion in deposits. What happened? Well, basically, I'll look at it from the stock perspective first, and then I'll communicate what basically took place based on what we know. On Thursday, you get up and the stock was down 60.4%. That's 60.4. That'll create a bad day for somebody, huh? Yeah. Unless you're short the stock. If you were short SIVB, you had a great day. And I know some people that were. And then on Friday, yesterday, pre-market, it actually hit $39.40 a share, which by the way, it closed Thursday at 106. It closed Wednesday of this last week at 267.83. So you go from 267.83 down to 106. And then on Friday morning, it's trading pre-market at 39.40. And before the market opens, they get halted, no trading, right? They wanted to stop the craziness that was going on, cause everybody to step back, have a drink, I don't know, something, so that the stock just doesn't completely get blown up. It had already gotten blown up, obviously. When a stock moves like that, it's clear something's wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some of the underlying mechanics that was taking place? Well, essentially, the cash needs for client withdrawals exceeded what the company's available cash was. And what happened was it forced the company, this is Silicon Valley Bank, symbol SIVB, that's Sierra Indigo, Victor Bravo. It forced the company to liquidate what are called their AFS, that's their available for sale securities. Essentially, they sold their entire book. And that was $21 billion worth of securities that said, gotta go, because we need cash, right? Well, that created about a $1.8 billion loss after they dumped that book of securities that they had. And what they ended up attempting to do unsuccessfully was raise enough capital to be able to plug that loss, right? Interestingly enough, and you hear me talk about this a lot, mainstream TV has a way of being very wrong about economic cycles. And I think mainstream TV has been very wrong about this economic cycle, because nowhere do you hear people talking about, hey, look, it's still a bear market. In fact, it's the opposite. You hear everybody talking about it's a new bull market.
Yeah.
Get excited, you should buy. You don't hear anybody talking about, look, recessions equal credit events or liquidity events. You don't even hear anybody talking about recession. The only thing you hear is people talking about either soft landing or, oh, it'll be no recession at all. I think that's complete garbage. And anyone who's willing to hang their investment hat on that is not paying attention, and they're really putting themselves at risk in thinking that that's an appropriate way to consider themselves. So here, let me give you an example. Literally a month ago on CNBC during Cramer's show, mm-hmm. he was urging people to buy SIVB. Okay. Now, to his defense, if you read all the public disclosures that exist from SIVB over the last, you know, couple of months, mm-hmm. I don't know, you'd walk away from it saying, oh, everything looks fairly normal. They're not suggesting that there's any problems. In fact, they're suggesting the opposite. They're suggesting that in a rising interest rate environment, they've got a matched bond portfolio in such a way that it'll mute the effects of what rising rates could eventually do to a company like that, where they've got a duration problem, right? An exposure to rates. Well, it didn't work out that way. In fact, the complete opposite of that happened. So while I can understand to some extent someone who wanted to back the company saying it'll be okay is because what their public disclosure said, mm-hmm. what you missed was the simple fact that during a market cycle like what we're in, bear market continuing to trend on all major indexes, interest rates continuing to go up like inflation's not dead. Well, by the way, it's not. And a Federal Reserve raising rates into an economic slowdown where ultimately we're going to see a negative GDP print coming probably in the Q2. When you have those conditions in play, you do not want to expose yourself to credit-laden companies, companies who provide credit. And in this instance, who were the biggest clients of Silicon Valley Bank? Venture capital, private equity, startups. Hey, look, in the midst of an economic cycle where growth is slowing, those are the things that slow the rapidest, if that's a word, the fastest, that need capital. That's a problem, right? If those companies are getting crunched the hardest, well, then people who are lending them the money for that can really, really run into a problem. So a few more mechanics of this whole thing. They've got a Silicon Valley Bank, they have a portfolio of securities called held to maturity portfolio. And that value of that portfolio is marked at $91 billion. Now, the fair market value of that, at least as of yesterday morning, it's probably lower today, but the fair market value of that was roughly $76 billion. So there's a $15 billion markdown that is taking place. Now, they don't have to recognize that due to the accounting rules, but it doesn't change the fact that the fair market value of those particular securities that were, quote, held to maturity, that's what they're designed to do, have dropped in value by $15 billion. So let's carry that through a little bit more. The total equity of Silicon Valley Bank is $16 billion prior to yesterday, Thursday's implosion. You throw the negative mark of this $15 billion on here, and that's a significant problem. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
So you got total equity at $16 billion. You got a negative mark on their held to maturity assets of $15 billion. That leaves them a positive billion, and that's it. Well, what that does is it precludes them from accessing the Federal Home Loan Bank system, which, of course, is a major, major backstop for liquidity when something like this happens. If they don't have the capacity to enter into an accessibility of additional capital from the largest government backstop on something like this, you get what you got, and that is an FDIC takeover, right? Mm. So you've got this scenario that's playing out where when something like that happens, now you can see why, hopefully through that little discussion, you can see why it could be called either a liquidity event or a credit event. The credit event came, caused a liquidity problem, you know, chicken and an egg sort of deal, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you call it. The problem is that in a recession with the Fed raising rates as growth slows, you get credit events, and those credit events lead to liquidity problems. And so the big implications that exist in the system probably goes way past Silicon Valley Bank, right? Mm. As of yesterday morning, before the FDIC data came out that said, hey, we're going to put these guys into receivership, the bottom line was that, look, something needs to happen, right? I mean, if SIVB is unable to raise the capital, and if no one steps up to buy them, that could have been a really big problem. It didn't turn out that way. FDIC took them over, and they'll figure out how to make it all work. Mm-hmm. Now, there are going to be depositors at SIVB, Silicon Valley Bank, that are going to be very unhappy because they probably had deposits greater than $250,000 that were not retirement accounts. Again, remember, the majority of their clients are venture capital, private equity, startups, things of that nature. It's not your typical mom and pop style bank with small depositors. And that's their problem. They just didn't have a lot of small depositors they had a number of pretty big ones. And Peter Thiel, who is, I mean, most people would know who Peter Thiel is if they just did a little bit of market research on him. Nevertheless, he's very instrumental in the venture capital side of things. And he suggested, hey, look, to one of his funds, he said, get your money out. Okay, well, what did that do? That created a good old-fashioned run on the bank, right? Probably a ton of operations that were dumping or trying to get their money out Wednesday and Thursday before this whole thing really went down. So about 10:30 yesterday morning, FDIC comes in, says, we're putting you in the receivership, and then we're going to figure this out from here. But the knockoff effect of that is that it was very, it was something that started to wave through the entire marketplace of regional banks. For example, there's an exchange traded fund with exchange traded fund symbol KRE. So KRE is the KRB regional index, regional bank index fund, again, symbol KRE. That was down 8.1% on the day on Thursday, which represents a 3.8 standard deviation move. Look, for those math geeks out there, that's a lot. That's a big number when it comes to a standard deviation in terms of a move. Now, is that to suggest it's going to go straight down? No, not on that one, because it's a, you know, it's an ETF. However, there are a lot of other banks that are exposed to subprime auto loan credit, and to some extent, subprime home credit. There's a lot of those out there, but it just didn't affect some of those smaller regional banks that you'd find inside that exchange traded fund symbol KRE. It also affected companies like Schwab. Schwab's stock was down 15% on the day.
Yeah.
Now that's no small company, right? Now, could that have been just, oh, panic selling? We don't know what's going to happen, so sell them all. Yeah. There's probably a little bit of that took place. But I can tell you, banks in general, especially some of these that have, in fact, these exposures to these subprime types of arrangements, they're getting nervous. The Silicon Bank issue is kind of sending one of these, I don't know, I don't want to be too hyperbolic, but you know, maybe a shockwave through the system, where I'm sure the men and women who are on the boards of these banks are getting together to figure out exactly what their risk exposure is and how to in fact contain them if they're not, and to make sure they are contained based on their current bond structure and loan portfolio, you know, and things of that nature. And you know, the thing about banks, of course, that we have to sometimes remember that's easy to forget is that as a bank, your assets are your loans, your liabilities are your deposits, right? Yeah. You have to make sure those are matched correctly. And there's federal guidelines and federal rules that you have to follow to make sure that that's getting done. And Silicon Valley Bank's problem was that their portfolio just carried way too much duration. In other words, way too much interest rate sensitivity. And when you have a high interest rate sensitivity portfolio of assets, that's a problem. That creates some very serious price volatility with regards to how your institution functions. And so, you know, like I said, you have this scenario that's playing out that is very consistent what we've been talking about for weeks, if not months, that when you get to a specific stage of the bear market where liquidity and credit becomes a serious problem, then that's where the real beginning stages of a bear market move can happen. Not to suggest you don't get bear market rallies inside that, because you will. You know, remember, fighting against the mouthpieces that exist on public TV or cable TV these days is very hard, number one. Number two, we're also in the midst of tax refund season, right? Yes, refund season is, to some extent, pretty big. You know, people have a tendency to get their great big tax refunds and go spend it,
yeah.
You know? I don't know if that's a great idea, but a lot of people do it. And many people, in fact, I've had a number of people tell me, well, we use our tax refund as our vacation money. I'm like, okay, so you're saving a bunch of money and the IRS doesn't pay you interest on it. Okay. Well, I wouldn't suggest that as a strategy, but I get it. I know where people are doing it. So I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to go so far as to say that Silicon Valley Bank is, the 2023 version of Lehman Brothers. I don't think that that's particularly the case. First of all, it's nowhere near as big. Mm-hmm. But could it be the potential for a rub off of other situations then also happening within the credit markets? Yeah. And there's a number of them that are out there that, you know, that sits on our list of companies that, that are potentially running into some serious problems. Blackstone is one. Different small corporate financiers, Prospect Capital Corp is another. I mean, there's just a whole host of companies that are out there that have subprime type exposures that could really seriously run into these credit/liquidity events. You know, whether or not they get blown up to the point where they're taken over and or taken out by FDIC, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I sent a note out to clients on Friday morning, and I know you get that yeah. note each time I send it. And one of the comments that I made inside that, with specifically with respect to what's taking place inside the credit markets right now, is that if you've got a high yield fund, also known as a junk bond fund, you might want to seriously reconsider that allocation, number one. And number two, if you do own it and don't want to sell it, you might want to seriously tear it apart and know exactly what's inside of it. Because there are a number of companies that are not yet potentially thrown out as, quote, junk in terms of their rating agencies. But if you tore them apart and started looking at balance sheets and some of the other details that would help you analyze how healthy a company is or is not, it's a high probability that company would, in fact, be classified as junk. We can't forget that all of the rating agencies lied to us in 2007 and 2008. I don't know if you remember that. Literally. Literally. All the rating agencies were lying about the creditworthiness of a number of major companies back in the great financial crisis. And a lot of that was that these companies could essentially buy their rating, right?
Yeah.
Is that taking place now? I have no idea. I don't have access to that kind of inside information. I just know that in the midst of a recession with the Federal Reserve raising rates into an economic slowdown, you get recession. And when you get recession, you get credit event, liquidity event. And those are things you have to protect against. And so a lot of people, Sean, over the past 2 years have really, really, really gone out on the risk curve, in many cases not knowing they're doing it, by buying a junk bond fund. Because why? It has a, quote, high yield. And that high income yield is very attractive to someone who maybe doesn't understand fully about what's inside or how to tear it apart. It's those high yield funds that are really, really, really in the midst of some serious exposure, in the midst of what could potentially be the beginning stages of a liquidity event. And so that's my big takeaway from what's taken place this last week, and the possibility of it rolling into some other segments of the market are very real.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
And remember, last week too, I think I commented on this last week. I said, look, if the S&P closes below 39-38 and VIX stays above 22, chances are really good that we see maybe another 10% to the downside on the S&P, right? Mm-hmm. Well, yesterday, what did we get? We got the market that sold off. And as it sold off, what did we get? We got a lower close with volatility moving higher, while at the same time, the US dollar went through a bit of an intraday reversal. Well, dollar up, rates down, stock market down, volatility up is a classic example of quad four growth slowing, right? Look, I don't care who has said it or who's out there been chirping me. The bear market is not over. We have not seen the end of these credit events or these liquidity events. Could we get a reversal in markets and see the bear market rally happen? Yeah, of course. But the probabilities are continuing to grow that as long as markets stay in this area with volatility starting to escalate again, if they can't hold volatility down the way that they've been doing it, remember, we've talked about some big operations who have been very successful at holding volatility low. And the keeping that volatility low has been instrumental in any bear market rally that's taken place over the past, you know, umpteen months. If they're failing at keeping volatility marked low at this point, well, then that's going to be a problem. You know, that's going to be a problem. And so far, that's sort of what it looks like we're getting. It just looks like we're getting a return to normality, for lack of a better word, as it relates to a bear market. And that bear market, you know, the probabilities are going up. Let's put it this way. The probabilities are going up that we visit the October lows. How's that? That's my viewpoint.
Well, that's something we're definitely going to want to talk a little bit more about. As, of course, we talk with Chris Klein each and every week here on Fox Sports 107 to the Game. This is Care for My Wealth. You can learn more about Chris and his team on their website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. He mentioned, of course, the daily newsletter and the email that he puts out to folks. If you want that, of course, you can work with Chris. All you got to do is head on over to the website or give him a call, 866-596-9886. That's 596-9886, 866-596-9886. Info at careformywealth.com, on Twitter at careformywealth, and available this podcast everywhere you listen to the coolest podcasts, whether it's iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, all those podcast platforms, and your smart speaker as well. We'll continue our conversation with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. We'll do that next as Care for My Wealth continues right here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. Here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game, hanging out this morning with Chris Klein. Of course, Chris comes to us from Capstone Wealth Management. Learn more about Chris and his team and their Go Anywhere strategy all on the website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Their telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And Chris, we were talking about credit events. We were talking about Silicon Valley, the bank out there, and what had gone on. And you mentioned the FDIC, and a lot of us are obviously very familiar with, because you see the sticker when you walk into your banking institution on the door about insured and those type of things. Retirement accounts, those type of things, treat a little bit differently than checking accounts. But where this hit of Silicon Valley, it's a pretty significant impact, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think I commented during my opening comments, you know, that Silicon Valley Bank was not the typical mom and pop bank. You know, it's not a type of organization that had just, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of small depositors, the sub 250,000 type of depositor. And these are venture capitalists. These are private equity operations. These are startup companies that have gone out and raised a lot of cash. That cash then needs somewhere to go so that the startup company can pay its bills, because the startup companies have a huge cash burn. I mean, they burn through a lot of cash really fast. Well, okay, in that instance, it's a cash account. You're still subject to the limits of $250,000 per depositor. Now, again, you can mess around with that a little bit by the way you title the account. But if you're a startup corporation, you're a corporation. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, your deposit structure is going to be set up in the name of your corporation. You're not likely going to have individual accounts set up in individual names to spread out the risk of a bank failure, especially with a bank like Silicon Valley Bank. I mean, they've been around a long time. They ostensibly had, as I mentioned earlier, public disclosures that would suggest that they were just fine, especially in a rising rate market. And so I don't know that they had anything seriously happening in the public's eye that would have alerted, a company to say, hey, man, we got way too much cash here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not a banker. I don't pretend to be one. I didn't sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. So what I would suggest to people is, if you have questions about FDIC, ask your banker, you know, and make sure that you've got yourself in a position where you're being protected. For us, you know, so our portfolios are held at a custodian, which happens to be Axos Advisor Services. Axos Bank is a publicly traded bank. However, we're subject to three things. One, Securities Investor Protection Corporation, which basically protects portfolios against firm failure up to $500,000, which includes $250,000 in cash. But then they also have a sweep program on their cash that book-wide carries out on the aggregate a protection of up to like $2.5 million in cash. We keep almost all of our cash in a very high-paying money market fund. That's not subject to the problems of bank failures. They're literally, you'd have no problems with money market accounts, money market funds, I should say. That's based on our analytics, because why? They hold exceedingly short-term paper, T-bills, for example, right? Very, very short-term dated, which right now are pretty high yielding on the margin. I mean, you know, as of yesterday, if you looked at some of the interest rates, like on a 3-month treasury bill was at 4.955%. A 6-month treasury bill was all the way up to 5.13%, right? Mm. So for our clients, we're holding almost all of our cash in these very high yielding money market funds, but we do have cash in the sweep plan so that we have it available for trades that come up for us to take advantage of. And that has protection on it. Right. Every major organization out there has protection on that. Book wise, as a firm, right, we have the capacity through additional insurance that's provided by, in this case, Axos, to protect the entire firm, no matter what the account value is at. Right. Of course, there's a limit that's offered by Axos, but then, you know, there's additional insurance that can be placed on above that. But I mean, it's big. It's like $100 million aggregate. So, I would suggest for someone who is concerned about whether or not they're holding too much money in their name, how you can either make an adjustment through the use of a money market fund or through the use of titling your name, your spouse's name, your trust, right? I mean, just from you could protect $750,000. There are ways you can make some titling adjustments to your bank holdings to make sure you fall under the protections of what FDIC has to offer. And it's pretty strong. You know, you can get all the arguments you want out of me or anyone else about whether or not FDIC is solvent because of whether or not our government is solvent.
Okay.
Well, at the end of the day, it's still the United States government. It's still backed by the full faith and credit of the taxing authority of the United States government, which the last time I checked is still pretty strong. And so because of that, I don't have a lot of worries about FDIC. I know there are some who do. I get it. I don't think it's a super valid concern based on, at least at this point, what we know to be true about how the system works, okay, right? So don't believe all the crazy hype that you might hear from time to time on certain websites, you know, or the doom preppers or, you know, whoever else is out there. It's not to suggest it's all puppy dogs and rainbows, though, either, Sean.
Sure.
Right? It's not to suggest that our government doesn't have its problems. It does. But it still has, and I say it, FDIC, still has the backing authority of the full faith and credit of the United States government. And that's a pretty strong aspect in terms of backstopping these kinds of things. So, but you want to be careful of these kinds of companies. Yes. November of 21, you might remember because I've talked about it enough to make probably everyone sick. November 21 is the cycle peak. SIVB, the Silicon Valley Bank, was trading at $749 a share, November 21, which was the cycle peak. 2 days ago, it was trading at $267 a share.
Ooh.
And now, ostensibly, it's gone.
Yeah.
Risk happens slowly and then all at once. These are the kinds of things that, without a process of understanding how market cycles affect different aspects of the economy, will get you in trouble. And that's what I'm hoping that people are taking away from listening to this show over the past several years, mm-hmm. but especially the last couple of years, where we've been very, very, very specific about market cycles, how they function, how they work, when they're happening, when they shift, and to not fight it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The trend is a very strong thing when it comes to markets. And I know that's easy to dismiss when you've got a lot of noise going on around you with TV and everything else telling you, you know, this is great, that's awesome, buy this, it's a new bull market. You know, don't worry, the Fed's going to cut rates, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about that for just a second.
Okay.
What in the world is the Fed going to do? I mean, look, they're roughly 2 weeks away from coming into the market and raising rates by another 50 basis points. I mean, that's what the futures markets are pricing in right now. Another 50 basis point increase. And that's what he's told us. We have no reason to disbelieve him. How in the world are they going to, quote, contain inflation if we find ourselves in a situation where more of these kinds of banking institutions have problems where the Fed needs to step in and create more liquidity? That would be causing them to pivot their inflation fighting plans too early. Now, there's some things that raising interest rates can't do. We recognize that. But their objective is to slow the economic cycle down so as to get a hand and to push down on inflation. And we're seeing inflation all over the place. I mean, I don't know if you're seeing what's going on in the used car market, but this is an area that is, I think, a very good depiction of dealing with inflation. I read an article yesterday, mm-hmm. the Manheim, Pennsylvania auto auction. Manheim auto auctions are all over the place, right? Huge. The Manheim, Pennsylvania auto auction was absolutely on fire. Rental car companies are overpaying to rebuild their fleet, which is kind of hilarious because in 2019, 2020, 2021, they were liquidating their fleet at terrible prices. Yeah. Hertz bought a 2019 Chevy Cruze for 30% over book value. A Toyota Tacoma with 300,000 miles on it went for 10 grand. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? Well, people need transportation.
Sure.
And for the most part, used cars are a very big part of providing for that type of transportation that's needed to get back and forth to work and, you know, things that go with it. So, you know, we've got this situation where the inflation situation is not, it's not contained, not even close. And remember this too, there's never been a time in history where when the CPI goes above 5%, that Fed funds don't end up above CPI. Okay, well, there's some work to do there if that's going to hold true. And I don't know if I want to step back and look and go, this time's different. I don't know. Is it? And now you've got the government coming out telling everybody, hey, we're going to raise your income taxes. Really? Do we think that that's a good idea? I mean, they want to raise the capital gains tax from 20% to 39.6%. That's only the highest since 1978. They want to raise the top income tax rate from 37 to 39.6. They want the corporate income tax rate raised from 21 to 28, self-employment tax from 3.8 to 5. They want to increase IRS funding by another 15%, which is on top of the $80 billion that they already got. Well, why do they want to increase IRS capacity? I don't know. But think about that. Why would you want to be raising tax rates on the highest level of producers that are out there? Because by the way, small to mid-sized business owners are in many instances in these top tax rates. if you hammer them, how do you think that's going to help you? That's going to find its way working through the system. If you raise the corporate tax rate, all you're doing is making those corporations less profitable and, in to some extent, to a large extent, less competitive. Do we think that they're going to just eat that cost? Tax increases are in and of themselves inflationary. So are we really going to repeat the exact same mistakes of the 20s and 30s, raising rates and taxes at the same time? Well, it appears that that's exactly what they want to do. So if all you did was take that and step away from it and say, well, yeah, but they said that they're not going to raise taxes on anyone who's not making at least $400,000 or more. Really? If you think that's true, you're not paying attention. Because last time I checked, there are lots of people who are making less than $400,000 a year that are subject to the capital gains tax rate, corporate income taxes, self-employment taxes, and so on and so forth. This is an area where it's something that I don't think people are fully appreciating, right? What if I told you this? What if I told you that the Fed's terminal rate is going to be 7%, that we're going to see the 10-year treasury at 6%, that a 30-year mortgage would be at 9%, 28% corporate tax rates, 40% capital gains? What if I told you something like that? Would you think I was nuts?
I would. That's crazy.
Most people would.
Yes.
Most people would look at that and say, that's insanity. But yet, at the same time, if we got to 7% on the terminal rate, in other words, Fed's funds hitting a level where the Fed says, okay, we're done, is that really that much of a stretch, knowing that CPI is at 6.5 and that certain aspects and certain components of the inflation market have not, in fact, reversed? Is it too much of a stretch to take history as our guide and think that, okay, well, if there's never been an instance once CPI gets above 5% that Fed's funds don't get above that CPI level, is it crazy to think that 7 is possible? I don't know that it's crazy. Is it crazy to think that a 30-year mortgage could hit 9%? Sean, we're at 7.
Yeah.
Right? Mortgage demand will identify the movement in interest rates. As mortgage demand collapses, things change, right? I'm not saying that these things are going to happen. I'm just saying that if you're not willing to at least consider the potential and the possibilities of these kinds of things taking place, I don't know that you're building into your investment plan and process a risk management potential of what that would look like when that actually takes place. So, you know, it's I think an interesting and yet important aspect to make sure that we're identifying where the risks could potentially lie. Mm-hmm. And the risks right now lie in the credit sector creating more liquidity events with a Fed who's clearly at this point not done raising interest rates, and a bond market that's really starting to wake up to, hey, this recession thing is getting a little louder. Now, that said, short term, I think we see interest rates on the long end of the yield curve probably move up a little bit from here. And if they move up a little bit from here, what we have to do is look at them and watch and see, okay, is that what we just experienced in the 10 and 30 year treasury, just a simple pullback within a rising interest rate cycle of the longer end of the yield curve along with the short end? Right now, I tend to think that's more probable than not. And if that's true, well, then that's the bond market saying inflation isn't dead yet. If institutions drive the market higher, and I'm not convinced that they will. I mean, it was pretty clear the way markets closed yesterday that people were not interested in risk. I mean, the S&P closed down another, you know, roughly 1.4%, clearly below the 39-38 level that I had given out as an important demarcation level. Volatility indicator, VIX, closed at 24, almost 25, got as high as 29. Remember, 30 and above creates a very uninvestable market. Mm-hmm. That's where bulls go to die, right?
Yeah.
These kinds of things starting to progress are creating risks in the market for the next leg. And if institutions somehow find a way to rally markets a little bit higher, mm-hmm. I'm telling you, with all the things going on underneath the surface of price, right? the higher they move it, the harder the fall will ultimately be. Now, to some, I may sound like a lunatic when I say that. But I'm telling you, this is what's happening underneath the surface of price. It doesn't have anything to do with what stock prices are. It's all the things that are happening underneath it in terms of credit, credit spreads, not so much the levels of interest rates, but spreads. Spreads are really where you identify the risks of markets. And what I'm saying is that risks in these markets, credit markets, stock markets, commodity markets, are accelerating. They're not decelerating. Not to suggest you can't find some trades from time to time, because you can. It's that if you are a longer-term investor, you need to try and get this shorter-term perspective, this flip, if you will, right, so that when this bear market does in fact start to really take over and we see the next shoe to drop, so to speak, you're not sitting there wondering what just happened. And so I'm still being very, very cautious, very, very careful. Our portfolios are running almost a zero beta, which means neutral to the market. And we'll increase that beta as we see, or we'll decrease that beta into a much more negative environment, which means that our portfolios would do the opposite of markets. Markets fall, portfolios would go up. We would do that when certain levels start to get hit. And we just haven't had a couple of things happen internally yet, but it's close. Mm-hmm. It's close.
Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. As we are getting closer and closer, it is more and more important to make that phone call, chat with Chris, get to know him. He would love to get to know you. He would love to help you, love to assist you. It all starts with a phone call, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. More information online, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Again, today's the day to give Chris a call, 866-596-9886. Chris, it's always great chatting with you, my friend. You enjoy this great day, and we'll talk soon.
All right, man. Take care.
This is Care for My Wealth right here, Fox Sports 1070, The Game.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.